Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yeah, Friday. What's up? Welcome in, Grant and Danny on the Fan. With you until 3:30. Nats pregame and then Nats baseball after that. An abbreviated, short, jam-packed 90 or so minutes of G&D today. What's up, pal?
It's a good Friday, my friend. Feels like we've been doing this for a couple hours already. I don't know. It's weird. Like, I feel like we're starting the show, but we've already been talking for a couple hours. I don't know, man. But we're just going to do our show now. We were hanging out with Brian Mitchell earlier on, which is a lot of fun. Appreciate his show for letting us hang out and shoot the banter back and forth with each other. But got a little bit of Nats news. The Caps all of a sudden, hey, defense, things are developing.
Did you say it's Good Friday?
It's good that it's Friday.
Okay.
But it's not actually Good Friday.
Good
that we've
Friday
had that.
Was last week.
It was last week, yeah.
I could have sworn you told me it's Good Friday, man.
Which is not true. It's just not true. It's patently untrue.
You're a week off.
Yeah, it's not right.
And it's very ironic that you're only 1 week off, because you could have said what you said any Friday. You could have been months off, but you were just 1 week off. So it is a good Friday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not Good Friday. Let's start with the Caps, because there's more Nats to get into, so we can kind of carry this opening segment with them. But yeah, the Capitals have lost four of their last six. And in fact, their two wins are both against the New Jersey Devils, who they beat eight times this year in a span of about 45 days. They beat the Devils 2-1. It took overtime, and 5-4 on Friday and Sunday last week. You take those two games out of the equation, doubled up by the Bruins last night 4-2, both of their goals in 5-on-3 situations. They were bailed out, not by the officials because the penalties were happening, but they were bailed out by the Bruins taking a ridiculous amount of penalties in the second period. Otherwise, it was a pretty lopsided affair.
Uh-huh.
They didn't play very well. They didn't score and played a buttoned-up defensive game. I thought it was pretty good hockey overall against the Islanders, but they lost 1-0, late goal for the Isles on Tuesday night. Prior to that, you skip over those two Devils games that I referenced, doubled up 8-4, their worst defensive game, maybe their worst game of the season by the Islanders.
Mm-hmm.
And remember before that, going back to the last game of March on a Tuesday night a week and a half ago, they got beat by the Rangers 5-2. So four losses in six games. And as you said, the trend defensively has not been particularly good with the number of chances they're giving up. Even last night, they only allowed four goals. One of them was at the end of the game late on the power play. Another was a shorthanded goal. But the high-quality rush chances, Samsonov was sensational, or else they would have been down 5-0 early.
Yeah, I think I read against the Islanders, they had 15 high-danger chances in the third period alone, which is a staggering number. Now, the Islanders only scored the one goal, so you say, okay, that's good. But the trend isn't particularly good. Now, some of the things here can be regression. We talk about this with baseball all the time, right? Things regress both positively and negatively sometimes. You're not playing the Devils every game. You're playing some better teams. The Islanders are really good. They're terrific. They're going to be a team that's formidable come playoff time. I think the Bruins have been playing pretty good hockey here of late. So, you know, and they've played tough against the Rangers all year long. So it's not time to panic. It's not an emergency type stuff, but the trends aren't great. When you see some of these crooked numbers, 5-8, 4-4, surrounded by some of these other games, you kind of go, they need to tighten this up. Trade deadline coming up here. I believe it's Monday. So what do you do? How do you evaluate this thing? Because big picture, there's a ton to be really, really positive about with this club. Their depth, when they had a bunch of guys out, when Tom Wilson's out for seven games, when their four Russian-born stars were all out because of the COVIDs. All they did was play good hockey. All they did was beat whoever was in front of them. There's been a lot of really good developments this year on all the lines, really, and some of the defensive players started to look more comfortable with Coach Laviolette's system. Now, all of a sudden, you're in a bit of a funk. You're playing some good teams. You got a bunch more good ones coming up with some nice little Buffalo Sabres appetizer in there. And you and me could beat Buffalo at this point. But you start to wonder, what does it mean? What sample's the most important? What does Brian McClellan do?
Yeah, I'm not worried about this team getting to and having a shot to go deep in the playoffs. They're showing warts right now that should give people some pause and concern and some nerves, maybe about them being cup caliber. But as you said, you have an opportunity to make a tweak to the roster with the deadline coming up. And I also just think this is a rut.
Yeah.
This is one of a couple times in a season where you're going to play like this. And ideally, you get hot and you play your really good hockey. We've seen them have one of those stretches already when they were ripping off wins. Best team in hockey for a five-week span prior to these last six games. Ideally, that happens during the playoffs and you go on the magical carpet ride. A lot of this is about timing. When you peak in the postseason, ask Eli Manning, ask Joe Flacco. Sometimes you get to live off of that for a long, long time. And so if they're playing well into and have a nice postseason run where they are on the back end, not giving up these high-end chances and buttoned up, then they're going to be good enough to go on a run. But I'm not overly concerned. Laviolette is a hell of a coach. He is the best thing they've had since Strotz. He's an upgrade over Reardon. I think their personnel is better this year than it's been the last couple of years on defense. I would like to see them make a move. The big question for me is, will they add a goaltender?
Goalie or not, I think is it.
Samsonov and Vanecek have at times played really well, but if you look at some of the advanced numbers, you know, they're more solid or okay than they are really, really good. There's a question to be had about if they want to package one of their veteran defensemen with a pick to go get someone a little bit better coming back to play on the blue line. But the bottom line is they've got 54 points through 40 games. Only the Islanders in the division have more, and it's by one win, 56 points. In the Central, only the Hurricanes with 57 points are more than a win ahead of the Capitals' pace. If you're looking at teams in the West, same scenario. There's not any team in hockey with more than three more points than them earned this year. The Caps have the same number of goals or more than everyone in their division other than the Penguins, who has one more goal scored than Washington. So you've got the firepower. You've done all this with over 40 man games missed. You mentioned all the Russian players that were out. Tom Wilson for seven games. Lars Eller, who's vital in the middle of the ice, has been out not once but twice at different points. So to have accomplished what they have, to be a fringe best team in hockey right there in terms of wins and points, having missed more time from key players than any of the other elite clubs in the NHL, I still feel fine. I'm not losing sleep, and I'm not going to overly concern myself with this team.
I think it's a fair assessment. I mean, again, you get to this point, and if you don't tell me how, I'm going, pretty good. They're in a good spot. That this is a good club. It's just the latest sample hasn't been particularly good, and they are not playing good hockey right now. I think we'd all kind of objectively say that. What does that mean? I think that's really the key for Brian McClellan, how he evaluates that, right? How are they viewing this? Hey, are these flaws that are being exposed, quote-unquote, or is this, as you said, a time where we're playing pretty much, you know, either four games in 7 days, you know, or a couple back-to-backs in there, we're condensed and we're crunched because of COVID-type stuff, and this is, our guys are worn down a little bit. How do they evaluate this? I think it's going to be a fascinating next 72 hours.
One point I want to make before we move on to the Nats, because people will say this when you talk about the Caps routinely. The reason they've been this good, you know, the reason they're 25-11-4 is their schedule. They play the Devils eight times, and they're playing teams that aren't very good, like the Sabres. You know, every time you need a pick-me-up, tonight after a bad game, you get Buffalo, and theoretically they'll go out and hopefully beat the Sabres 5-1 tonight, and everyone will be feeling better tomorrow. While that's true, that's a great benefit this year, the schedule, every team's got it. Every team's dealing with it. So you can't tell me, well, the Capitals aren't actually that good. They're just a 56-point team after tonight, hopefully, because they play the Sabres so much or because they play the Devils. The Penguins have the exact same schedule. They're actually the softest part of their schedule's upcoming, which is why I worry about them winning the division. But you could say it about the Maple Leafs, who everyone thinks is going to make their first cup run in forever. You could say it about the best teams out west. Everyone gets to beat up on bad teams. Take advantage of it and do it. That's part of this weird year and this weird schedule. So I don't hold that against the Capitals. It's just the cost of doing business this season. in the NHL, and the team that handles best playing better competition more regularly come the playoffs will be the last teams standing. All right, let's go to the Nats. Huge news today. If you're just joining us on Grant and Danny, just jumping in the car this afternoon, the Nats are getting several players back to help them against the Dodgers. They will not have, see, these are the players that are not returning yet. Still don't have Josh Bell at first base. Still don't have Kyle Schwarber in left field. Still don't have John Lester in the rotation. Still don't have Patrick Corbin in the rotation. However, they are getting back their closer, Brad Hand, and both of their catchers, starter and backup in their catching rotation, Yan Gomes and Alex Avila. They've kept Jonathan Lucroy on the team. He's going to start today because those other two guys are maybe not quite in game shape to go catch nine innings until tomorrow to get their legs back under them. But they're getting four players back to their roster. They're sending Carter Kieboom down to the minors. And it sounds as though they've announced Max Scherzer's going to start on Sunday now. So tomorrow, still to be determined. You know how I feel. I think that there's a chance, they're hoping, that maybe just like today, guys came off the list, maybe tomorrow Patrick Corbin will be available to start.
To that end, Jesse Docherty, Mark Zuckerman, Matt Weirich? Weirich. I have not said his last name,
I
apologize
that
to him.
Up.
He's been on the show. He's awesome. I definitely follow him. Anyway, they're all tweeting the same thing here. Patrick Corbin flew to Los Angeles today, and he's been cleared through coronavirus protocols. He will throw on flat ground today and work out at Dodger Stadium. That's major. That is Max Major news. I didn't know that. That's just now through the beat reporters who are all saying that, I guess, via Davey's press conference.
Okay, but hold on.
Yeah.
So Corbin throwing on flat ground and being in Dodger Stadium is cool, and that's great because it means he could pitch soon. But does that mean that he will not pitch tomorrow, which has been my hope all along?
Because tomorrow is still TBD.
Correct.
According to what
but,
we're seeing.
And my point is, Austin Voth is going to make that start. You would just list him as the starter if you don't have some hope that Corbin could throw. But why would he throw off flat ground? Why would he be doing those things if he's ramping up for a start tomorrow?
I don't know the answer to. But this is different than hasn't made the trip to LA, isn't available. We don't, like right now, I don't know where Josh Bell is. I don't know where Kyle Schwarber is hanging out. Right, quarantining. So until that report, I thought Patrick Corbin was one of those guys too, where he is not only not available, but he's not even doing anything baseball related. He's cleared coronavirus protocols, which is massive to me, which means he's on his way back over the next few days. I'm excited about that. Exactly when? I don't know.
No, huge development, yeah, for sure, because we didn't know. When will we see Patrick Corbin? Just my own thinking all along was, fingers crossed, I hope I see Patrick Corbin on Saturday in L.A. because he doesn't have COVID, and he's just one of the guys that's in the protocol, and he gets cleared before that, and then he gets to pitch. But you'd have to be planning for that in advance. He would have had to have his side session. He would have had to have his touch and feel stuff. You know, all of his pre-start work would have to have been done in anonymity away from the team with nobody watching and no lights on him. And it doesn't sound like that was the case.
So they want to ramp him up, according to what I'm seeing here. So probably not tomorrow.
So why wouldn't they just announce both tomorrow?
I don't know that. I don't know the answer to that.
Are you trying to throw the Dodgers off? Guess what? Now it's Austin Voth. You're not prepared. He's about to go seven shutout. What are they waiting for then?
That I don't have an answer to. It looks like, so just from the sound of this, again, I'm reading very quickly here. Jessica Camerato, Todd Dybas, among others, are basically saying that Davey wants to get Corbin ramped up before he actually goes into a game, which doesn't sound like tomorrow, does it?
All right. No, I would say no. So then I'm going to guess Voth tomorrow, Scherzer on Sunday.
Scherzer Sunday, yes.
Max needs to win on Sunday. Max needs to not give up four solo shots.
Okay, let's write this down.
Keep the ball in the ballpark, and they need to win on Sunday so that they can get at least one game in this series. Ross against the Dodgers lineup, Voth against the Dodgers lineup.
No Mookie Betts or Bellinger.
Ideally, one of those guys plays well, pitches well, and goes out and has a great game, but you're also dealing with elite-level arms, too. They're facing Dustin May in this series, who throws 100. Today, they've got Walker Buehler, who they can never seem to hit.
Yeah. Who is excellent.
You're up against it for these next couple of games, so you're going to need Max to go shove. And if you steal one of these two, great. I'm not saying you can't win. You got a bunch of big leaguers that came to L.A. with you. This is a professional outfit. You can absolutely beat the Dodgers in one of these two. My point is, if you play them with this lineup and these pitching matchups, more often than not, you lose those games. But if Max gets a win and you steal one of these and you leave there with two out of three in this series, let's throw a party. Let's get rolling on to St. Louis and welcome some more guys back.
Yeah, find a W somewhere. you know, you lose 2 out of 3 to the Dodgers, I think that's everyone's going to do that this year. There's not a team in baseball right now that's going to go to L.A. when they got Bueller, Urias, and Dustin May going. That probably isn't going to drop 2 out of 3, with or without Betts and Bellinger.
Honestly, I'd rather face Kershaw.
100% I would.
Certainly than Bueller and May. I might rather face Urias tomorrow than Kershaw. But, I mean, his stuff at this point is every bit as nasty or better.
Yeah. So, you get to work it out for you. Then you go to St. Louis, who again, is off to a pretty
good start. I'm glad they're not facing Bauer. Bauer, who, by the way, had a couple baseballs confiscated by Major League Baseball so that they could monitor the usage, potentially.
Hilarious to me.
Of some type of...
The foreign substance.
Foreign substance.
I'm sure it's just a coincidence they picked him. I'm sure it is.
I talked to a guy last night in baseball who said, who's on a big league team.
Uh-huh.
He said he believes that 90% of pitchers use something when they throw.
Yeah.
This is going to be such a dog and pony show if baseball wants it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so unnecessary. This is the equivalent in baseball of speeding. Basically, guys using something while they throw. Now, it does make them nastier. It increases their spin rate, makes their fastball more effective. It, mm-hmm. it makes the breaking stuff sharper and harder to hit. So if you're trying to make the game easier for the offense and you're going to create more hits and runs, this is certainly a way to do it. Crack down on this. What that player told me was it's their understanding that they're going to be confiscating baseballs from tons of pitchers, and they already are, and that basically they're using it just to gather information. So we want to check your spin rate this year compared to last year and the year before, and now we're going to check these baseballs and see who's doing it or who's not.
It wasn't the Mitchell report just for information, too?
Supposedly.
Not the changes, I'm sure.
But guess what? Baseball leaked that they went after Trevor Bauer's balls.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Oh, exactly. The dog and pony show is 100% correct, by the way. This is going to be the big story. We're very serious about jaywalking. And they'll write a couple of tickets. They will, but they're not serious. Actually, serious about making any
but
kind of substantive
of those things,
change,
though, because people use the word cheating, and you know, someone will come out and say it's worse than performance enhancing drugs, and it's got more impact on the game than steroids. And the next thing you know, this molehill will be a mountain where you'll have, you know, Max Scherzer or whoever, Trevor Bauer,
yeah.
And now we're supposed to question this guy's years and years of dominance, or Bauer winning the Cy Young Award last year, mm-hmm. and it's a joke. I mean, it is. It's just so dumb. And baseball's bringing it on itself, and I don't really understand why.
They're hoping that just the idea that they might patrol this thing will curb it. And it's not going to. It's not at all.
If you tell people, hey, we're going to be confiscating baseballs, we're going to be looking in to try to get information on who's doing this and not, we're monitoring analytically through StatCast spin rates that are jumping over years. So just so you know, we're doing all those things, and you're going to get in trouble if you're cheating. They're using that word. I'm not. I guess the thought is, okay, guys are going to stop doing it. Newsflash, they're not going to.
Nobody's
going to
stop.
Why would I stop if I'm on a staff with a dozen arms and 10 of them do this? And I know, because I've been on 3 other teams, that 10 guys on every team do it.
I watched Garrett Cole go from Jag in Pittsburgh to 100-mile-an-hour, four-seamer looks like it's hydroplaning in Houston. I'm sure it's a miracle. Just something had happened because he stretched differently. Everybody knows.
Well, the Bauer thing's hilarious, too. Because Bauer called out the Astros and very publicly said over and over again, why is it that their spin rates are all great? Why is it that every pitcher that goes to Houston improves their spin rate an amount that you can't improve naturally? And he's saying all this on social media.
Of course.
And then he even supposedly, I don't know if this is proven or not, but had an inning one time where he kind of told people, check out this inning, check out my numbers, and his spin rate jumped from one inning to the others. I mean, he's that kind of a guy.
Yeah.
So now he's the first person that's getting called on the carpet by baseball. The whole thing is absurd. I want to look back on the last time the Nats were in L.A. The last time they were at Chavez Ravine in Los Angeles was for Game 5 of the National League Division Series in that unbelievable 2019 World Series run. And it was one of the greatest games in Nationals history.
So amazing.
They'll play the first game in that ballpark since then today. And I want to relive that with you and get chills all over again. So if you guys want chills, if you want to be emotional, if you want to be welling up with happy tears in your car or in your home, make sure you're listening to Greg and Dave next. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Nationals baseball in 1 hour. Pre-game show set to begin. Charlie Slows and Dave Jagler. And first pitch set for about 90 minutes from now at 4:05 today from L.A., where the Nats went as a 93-win wildcard team in 2019 to take on a 106-win one-seed Dodgers team as heavy favorites and came back to D.C. for the World Series a couple weeks later because they had navigated through the Dodgers for the first time in the division series, then made short work of the St. Louis Cardinals. So let's go back to 2019. We can get to Game 5, which is the last game they've played in the ballpark where they're going to be today. I can't imagine, by the way, for some of those guys, Zim and the veterans that were on the team, even the kids like Juan Soto, Victor Robles, it's got to come flooding back as you walk out of the tunnel.
Pretty cool memories,
go
huh?
Go up the steps today to go take batting practice. But that series was such a show. So Game 1 was in L.A., and they had it handed to them 6-0 in the first game of that series. Remember, Patrick Corbin pitched, and he couldn't throw a strike in the first inning.
So he had threw a million pitches, striking people out, but also walked the entire yard 17 times and only give up one run in the first, but it was a harbinger of what was to come that day.
And soon enough, they would add on. It was tight game, actually. They were down 1-0 the entire game. They fell behind 2-0 into the late innings, and then the Dodgers continued to hang zeros in the Nats' bullpen, couldn't do the same. Seventh, eighth innings, they gave up runs. Not particularly surprising because the bullpen, when it wasn't Corbin, who happened to start that day, or when it wasn't one of their starters, Strasburg or Scherzer, if it wasn't Doolittle or Huddy, they didn't really have options. So Fernando Rodney gave up hits and runs. Hunter Strickland gave up hits and runs, and it was just amazing that he was even pitching at that point in the playoffs, giving up bomb after bomb. But they take the L, and the guy that is on the hill today, Walker Buehler, allowed one hit, 6 shutout innings, 8 strikeouts in that game, and they fall behind 1-0 in the series. So you go, here we go again. Offense isn't working. It's the division series. You're down 1-0.
They'd gone the entire Milwaukee game, too, without managing anything other than a Trey Turner solo homer. And you kind of go, are we doing this again?
We're doing it again. So then game 2 happens, and Stras is on the hill, and the Dodgers are destroying the ball off him in the first inning. It was like multiple doubles all to the base of the wall or off the fence. He gives up a run, then basically is able to get out of that jam, but the Dodgers in game 2, you had to be worried. I mean, it was like, okay, before we get to the late innings of that game, Stras is starting, and they're hitting the ball all over the yard.
So game 2, actually, Stras was good at the start. It was game 5 where Peterson
right.
leads off
yes,
with the double
yes,
and then Muncy
right.
homers. So this was one of those where they scored a little bit and then you just turtled and you just prayed and held your breath and had bubble guts. Our famous, I'm sure it's famous, but our conversation with Daniel Hudson.
Our famous
It's a famous convo. Look it up on nowhere that no one cared. What am I talking about? What a horse's ass comment by me. It's a famous convo, I'm sure.
The number one downloaded thing on Spotify right behind Taylor Swift's.
Anyone knows what I'm talking about. But that's the game where they held on for dear life, and Hudson loads the bases, had that 20,000-pitch at-bat with Corey Seager, finally punches him out with a slider, but they hang on to win 4-2. Strasburg goes 6 and only give up 3 hits and 1 earned run,
that's
striking
right.
out 10.
You told him in that famous conversation.
The famous conversation.
You said, I had bubble guts, and he said, so did I. Yeah, that's right. So Stras was unbelievable in that game. It was a 3-hit, 1-run out, and he punched out 10 in 6 innings. And then they went Doolittle, Scherzer in relief, and he struck out the side in his frame, and then Huddy. And it was a keep-away game. You're right. It was like all night long. You knew this was the offense that they were getting.
Yeah.
They weren't going to score again, essentially. And you just couldn't give up any runs. And Max was unbelievable out of the pen, kind of erasing the years earlier against the Cubs where he came in and didn't throw very well in a division series.
He was electric.
And then
it was
Huddy,
awesome.
Who was an offseason demotee. I mean, he got cut by a team in the offseason, then at the deadline got traded to Washington as just a throw-in piece of a nothing deal. He's now closing games in the playoffs, and he, with a big slider, gets the strikeout. So they're 1-1 coming back to D.C. at that point. They get blitzed in Game 3.
So you remember Game 3? Anibal Sanchez was great for 5 innings.
Yes, he was.
They have a 2-1 lead. Patrick Corbin comes in.
7-run sixth.
Oh, was that bad. And that colored everybody's impression of Patrick Corbin out of the bullpen, right? Because everyone's going, I don't want to see Corbin out of the bullpen because of how bad that performance was. He would go on to do some pretty good things out of the bullpen, if people recall. But we're all sitting there going, ew, this is bad. He just couldn't get out of it.
Also,
couldn't get right.
At that point, $140 million offseason acquisition.
Yeah.
Number three starter. But he started game one, didn't pitch well in that first inning, and they lost the game, obviously. And now he comes out of the pen after on a ball threw really well, and he gave it up with the six earnings on four hits and two-thirds of an inning. I mean, he was the GOAT, not the greatest of all time, but he was kind of the villain, so to speak, in town. He was the guy everyone was angry at, unfortunately, after they got beat 10-4. Game four, your season's on the line now. You lose, and you're eliminated. In Washington, D.C., are you showing up? Are you going to be there for another one of these games where you go home on the verge of tears because the Nats have been bounced? And they didn't let it happen in front of 36,000 at Nationals Park. The biggest moment from that game was the three-run bomb from Ryan Zimmerman with two outs in the fifth inning off Pedro Baez. And it was statistically the highest ball off the dirt vertically with height that any National had hit out that season. He basically went up the ladder to hit a ball out. They win 6-1 in game four, which set up game five, which is the whole point of this conversation. Is this going to be different? We have done this dance. We have been here before. The incredible game four win to force a game five. It feels like this is the time. Michael Taylor hits the big homer in Strasburg, has the best start of his career against the Cubs to come back to Nationals Park for game five.
Jason Worth homers against the Cardinals, all the momentum in the world. They get out to an enormous lead in game five against the Cardinals. This is different. This is different. Everyone was scared to death.
Could this be the time? And this is what I was thinking about with Strasburg.
Yeah.
This is where he gives up basically four hits that go to the fence in a row to start the game.
Not fooling anybody at any point in time. I think it was the second or third pitch of the game. Jock Peterson drills a ball through the wall in left field.
Yeah.
Max Muncy, by the way, the greatest living hitter as far as I'm concerned, especially that series, homers. They're down 2-0 before you can exhale. Kike Hernandez, a part-time Peter, who just is so comfortable against Nationals pitching for whatever reason, homers to put them up 3-0. And you're going, oh my God, what is happening?
Through two innings.
Mm-hmm.
It was supposed to be different. Mm-hmm. Strasburg was on the hill. He's coming off of this masterpiece. He's been great down the stretch. You know, you're facing Walker Buehler. You know offense is going to be at a premium. You're probably not going to hit much. But if Strasburg is nearly perfect, you got a chance. And now he gives up two in the first and one in the second, and you're down 3-0 after two innings. But this time was different, boys and girls. And the difference was, this time I had Juan Soto. I didn't have Juan Soto in the past.
No.
This time I have Juan Soto! Fire up Charlie and Dave. Game five. The last time they were in L.A., enjoy it, people. Wear it like cologne.
Here's the 1-2 delivery. Swing a line drive right field. That's a base hit toward the line. Rendon being waved in. Peterson throws it in toward the plate, and it is not in time. Rendon scores standing on an RBI single for Juan Soto. The Nationals are on the board here in Game 5. It's now Los Angeles 3 and the Nationals 1.
Kershaw's 1-0 to Rendon, swung on, hit of the year to deep left center field. Taylor going back, warning track, at the wall, he leaps, it is gone, goodbye! Bang, zoom goes Rendon on the second pitch from Clayton Kershaw. And this is now a one-run game here in the top of the eighth inning. And it's now the Dodgers 3 and the Nationals 2 with nobody out here in the top of the eighth inning. Here's the pitch. He swings and belts one at deep right center field. Way back! Going! And gone! Goodbye! Halfway up the pavilion. A tremendous game. Tying home run by Juan Soto. And this game is all even. The Nationals dugout goes wild as Soto crosses the plate. He has tied this game. He drives in his second run of the night. It's his second home run of the series. And Dave Roberts on his way to the mound. The Nationals have hit back-to-back home runs off Kershaw. It's the Nationals 3 and the Dodgers 3 with nobody out here at the top of the eighth inning. And Kershaw is done.
Kelly's one-strike pitch. Swinging a fly ball, center field deep. Bellinger going back to the warning track, to the wall. It's a grand slam. Howie Kendrick has done it. They're going crazy in the Nationals dugout. Howie Kendrick with a grand slam here in the 10th inning of Game 5. The Nationals 7, the Dodgers 3. Do you believe it? Long look in, Doolittle is ready. One ball, one strike on Justin Turner. Here's the pitch. Swinging a fly ball shallow center. Racing on is Taylor. Closing on it. Dives. And he caught it. A diving catch ends the series. What a play by Michael Taylor. A diving catch. And the Nationals, for the first time in their history, will play in the National League Championship Series. They're celebrating on the pitcher's mound, jumping up and down. Michael Taylor getting surrounded near second base with a diving catch to close out the Dodgers. Final score, the Nationals 7, the Dodgers 3. The Nationals win the series 3-2, and it's on to St. Louis to play for the National League Championship.
Thank you for putting that together, Darris.
Get home safe.
If you didn't have chills listening to that, I don't know what to tell you.
Just so concerned for those fans to have to fight that traffic to get home.
Did you get chills?
Yeah. A little misty in my eyes, man.
Legit emotional listening to that.
Thinking about Kenta Maeda coming in after those Kershaw homers, striking out the side. Thinking about Joe Kelly when he first came in, striking everybody out. Patrick Corbin coming in for the eighth inning. He actually came in the bottom of the seventh for Jock Peterson. I'm going, they're not going to win this.
Poor guy.
This is going to be the next chapter of horrible heartbreak. But hey, they're here. They're fighting. This team has been resilient all year long. And then Rendon starts the inning with a double. I go, well, maybe if somebody bunts him over, you could have a chance on a sack fly. Or maybe there's a mishandling of a grounder. There's a human truck by the name of Howie Kendrick. There's a bulldozer. There's an absolute Hulk in a baseball uniform there that's going to take a 97-mile-an-hour two-seam riding fastball knee-high off the inside corner. He's going to hit about 420. Just to the right of center field, which no mortal man should be able to do at any point in time, by the way. He's going to go ahead and do that and send us on to the next round.
The two swings in the postseason from Howie.
Come on.
That'll go down
in
history as arguably two of the five biggest swings in franchise history.
They're my top two?
You forget them. They're your top two?
They're my top two.
See, Soto, I just love Soto. So I'm going to have him all over that top
five. You think I'm upset at you for loving Soto?
No, I don't think you're upset, but I think you are.
Give me your five.
Top five swings in Nats history?
Yeah.
I'll have to give them to you next because I want to finish this thought and we're already late.
Okay.
But I'll give you my top five swings in a moment. But I do want to say that listening to that clip, the first thing that jumps out is, oh my God, what a run for Howie Kendrick.
Yes.
That guy hit that grand slam and then proceeded to hit the two-run home run that beat the Astros in Game 7. That doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't. Well, and just constant casual two-out huge hits against the Cardinals, too, that we forget in these airtight games.
The Cardinals series is so forgotten because it was never in doubt.
Like 1-0 games, 2-0 games, 3-1 games, like close.
Just a clean sweep domination. Yep. Also, though, pictured there, Michael Taylor was so great in those playoffs.
Sure was.
As just a role player, extra piece. He was always good in the postseason, but Michael Taylor, the diving catch, back in L.A., so as you're listening today, as you're watching, if you check out the game, is Masson televising this one? Do we know?
I actually don't know. MLB Network's got it as like a special showcase. Do they supersede?
Well, Masson's televised two games.
Yeah.
Maybe even three
it's
already.
It's a record for them. I mean, they're really
on fire.
So
they might be tired. They might want to not televise anymore. But if you check out the game today, remember Game 5.
Please do.
I'll give you my top five swings in Nats history. And how many of them are going to be Juan Soto versus Howie Kendrick? Will Jason Wirth make an appearance? And we'll get into that next on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Nats baseball today at 4 o'clock. Charlie and Dave come your way at 3:40 or so. May want to touch base with them, see if one of them wants to jump on with us, because I actually want to run by them the list that I just put together of my top five swings in Nats history later on. So we'll see if we can circle back with those guys. All right, so you asked me, Danny.
I did.
Challenged me, I would say. Top five swings, hits, moments, Nationals history at the plate. Define it. Are we saying important? Or are we saying biggest? What are we doing?
Great question. I think it's up to the eye of the beholder here. So I'm thinking your top five swings, your biggest swings, right? Because that's going to be different for everybody else. I mean, the first time that, you know, I don't know, you could pick some, like, Termell Sledge homered back in town. Hey, this is awesome. Nationals, yeah. It's cool. It's our own thing.
Someone could do a Zim 08 opening night at Nats Park.
Bit. Yeah. I'm not doing that.
I'm not doing that.
Here's a spoiler alert for me. A lot from the World Series run.
Right.
A lot of those made it.
The point of us talking about this today is they're back in L.A. where a couple of these swings took place, where some of the biggest moments in team history occurred the last time they were there. That's why we're doing this right now. Getting ready to play their first game against the Dodgers out west since Game 5 of the Division Series in 19. All right, so number five. I'm going to tell you what missed the cut first.
Okay.
Missing the cut. Juan Soto, Game 1 of the World Series in the fourth inning, when he hit a home run that tied the game up in the fourth inning against Gerrit Cole.
Mm-hmm.
I've got that missing the cut. I wanted to put it in because I love Juan Soto, but it's not going to be in. I've also got Juan Soto Game 5 of the World Series off Justin Verlander, fifth inning, to take a 3-2 lead. Game 6. So this is, they just came back from Nats Park.
Yep.
They lost three in a row. They're facing elimination. And in the fifth inning, Juan Soto hits a bomb to take the lead off Verlander that may land sometime next week.
At least he took his bat with him.
Right.
What's up, Alex Bregman?
He just dropped his bat at first base. So that didn't make the cut either. And I'm also going to say that Jason Worth's home run against the Cardinals, also receiving votes, did not make the cut.
Used to be number one. It's out of the five.
Number five on my list of the most important swings in Nats history, Anthony Rendon, Game 7 home run in the seventh inning. This was right after the Trey Turner screw job when Davey got run.
Yeah.
Tony Rendon, he hits a ball over the left field wall and everything was going to be okay. The Nats go into the seventh inning down. They came out of the seventh inning in the lead, three-run inning. Anthony Rendon home run right smack dab in the middle of it all.
Mm-hmm.
Number five.
First blood against Greinke that game.
Number four, Juan Soto against the Dodgers. We played the clip a few moments ago. It was the last time they played a game in L.A. before today. Rendon had just gone deep off Kershaw to make it a one-run game. And then the kid who doesn't feel anything, who's just confident, and he wasn't here for anybody's nonsense of the Nats getting run out of the playoffs or shriveling up in the moment. All the years of people not being able to step up and deliver on the big stage didn't matter to the teenager because Juan Soto was better than everybody else. Soto against the Dodgers, game-tying homer off Kershaw to force extra innings where they would eventually win, number four on my list. Number three on my list, Kendrick's game winner against the Dodgers. Got that third. Number two on my list, Kendrick's home run against the Astros in Game 7 of the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
So you're wondering, Grant, if Kendrick and Kendrick have already been used, what's the number one swing in the history of the Nationals on your list? It belongs to Juan Soto against the Milwaukee Brewers.
Wow.
In the wild card game, thank you for misplaying a ball in right, for allowing a party at the plate.
Trent Grisham.
I'll never forget that name. Trent Grisham, we appreciate you. Juan Soto, who's all over this list. I thought about a couple of others. They didn't make it. Soto's number one. He's number four. Kendrick is number two and number three. Rendon is number five. Soto against the Brewers, because without it, none of this happens. And you're still talking about how this is a bunch of chokers and they can't rise to the occasion. You don't have a ring. I had to do more radio with you talking about woe is me. I hate Washington, D.C. sports. It's sad to be me. I just want a parade. Juan Soto against the Brewers, number one.
So that one didn't make my five
because
that got them to where they'd been before. Getting them past where they'd been before, that's what my list is all about. Major moment.
So give me your list.
Oh, so number five. Ryan Zimmerman versus Gerrit Cole. First blood off the invincible Gerrit Cole in the World Series. They're in the game. They're not just here to be cannon fodder. They're not just here to lose. They are here to compete. That first blood was a major moment to say that they're in this series. That was massive for me.
Game one of the World Series.
Game one of the World Series.
A home run that
made
still had
one.
Them down a run.
Made it 2-1.
Your list, not mine. I don't love that one. Keep going.
Number four, Rendon versus Greinke. You covered it. Number three, Juan Soto to tie the game against the Dodgers. Number two, Howie Kendrick against the Dodgers, again, to propel them further than they'd ever been. Not even close. And number one is the World Series game-winning home run that Howie Kendrick hit. That'll do it for you.
It's a good home run.
That's number one.
Not enough Juan Soto on your list?
No, a good amount. You got Soto in there.
but not enough.
Right. Not in the wild card game to get to the right to be in the division series before. They'd been in the division series and lost that.
They were about to be eliminated. And for so many years in that spot, flailing strikeout.
Oh, sure. Wilmer Defoe up for some reason.
Pop up to second base. And we all go home from Nats Park saying what could have been after they lost the wild card game. Grant and Danny with you on the Fan. We are taking you up to pregame today with Charlie and Dave at 3:30. There's an NFL story that came out that we want to hit. We'll get to that next. And we can hit your calls as well at 800-636-1067 on the news that the Nats are getting some key players back. We'll tell you who is back in the lineup and what the lineup looks like next. Thank you, Heisty. Welcome back. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Massive news right now, just breaking within the last couple of minutes. This is monstrous for DC sports fans. And it's one of those Charlie Slow style, remember where you are so you remember where you were type things. April 9th, 2021, the day you found out, you could go see the Wizards.
Here.
See the Capitals.
We.
See the Nationals.
Go. Let's go.
Michael Bryce Sadler, who covers the D.C. government for the Washington Post, just releasing D.C. has approved waivers to host fans at Capital One Arena for the Wizards and Capitals games effective immediately. So this is not, hey, as of May 1st, effective immediately. So the question then becomes, how soon can the Wizards and the Capitals enact their plans, the policies they put forth? We had the executive director of external affairs from Monumental Sports and Entertainment, Monica Dixon, on yesterday. We asked her about the things that they've done. They had all their protocols ready to go, all of their plans in place. So now we wait for the teams to try to tell us and let us know when you can actually get to the arena to see the Wizards, to see the Capitals. But there will be, it's very limited, obviously, 10% capacity. About 2,000 fans is what they're hoping for at those games, including in the playoffs for the Capitals. Going to be very hard to get tickets, I'm sure. It'll be very, very hard to actually get into the arena, understandably. But someone's going to be there, which is awesome. Additionally, the Nationals and DC United have had the amount of fans allowed in their stands upped.
Doubled, basically.
To 25%. Mm-hmm. Over doubled.
Yeah, more than doubled, right?
They were at 10%. They're now at 25%. So for DC United, I think they were at 2,000. They'll now be at well over 4,000. And for the Nationals, I just did the math. The capacity at Nats Park is 41,313 fans. 25% of that is a little over 10,000 fans.
For reference, the next Capitals home game is against the Philadelphia Flyers on the 13th of April. The next Nationals home game is on the 15th of April against the Arizona Diamondbacks for a nice little start to a homestand.
Now, I'm quite sure
information.
The Nationals are going to be able to get ready for 10,000 when they just had 5,000 there the other day. To go from zero to 2,000, I know it's not quite as many people, but you haven't had anyone in there yet. Maybe you need to do a little bit more getting your ducks in a row. So I know they're already planning on having fans. They'll max it out at 10,328. I think that's what they're going to be allowed, probably at the next home game, presumably. We have to wait to find out if the Caps and the Wiz are ready for their next games to have fans. But this is huge.
Yes.
News in our attempt to return to normalcy and our attempt to just have life ongoing in Washington, D.C. And what is important and what does not change is that we want everyone to be healthy and safe. But there is, at this point, with as many people getting vaccinated as have and continue to day in and day out in this area, there seems to be an ability to walk and chew gum here, where people who are at lower risk and or are vaccinated can make the decision for themselves that they want to go to a sporting event.
Yep.
And people who have not yet been vaccinated or who might be at more risk still don't go to that sporting event. But as things start to open back up around the country, D.C. was quite literally one of the last cities that hadn't budged yet. There were two NHL teams in this country that had no plans as of 10 minutes ago to have fans in the stands. The Caps were one of them. That now changes. The Blackhawks are the last team standing. From a basketball standpoint, the Wizards were one of four teams that had no plans until a couple minutes ago. Michael Bryce Sadler of the Post saying that DC has approved the waiver. Caps and Wiz get fans in the stands immediately. He doesn't have the number here, but Monica Dixon told us yesterday on the show 2,000 is what they're hoping for. And the Nats, DC United as well,
yep.
25% capacity.
Awesome.
10,000 fans at a time at Nats Park. I thought 5,000 sounded and looked pretty good for the Nationals. I mean, optics-wise, it was very empty, but it sounded like energy and
sure,
excitement.
Sure, yeah, there's a buzz. There's a buzz there.
So double that. It's actually going to—I mean, there are, you know, occasionally on a Tuesday night at the beginning of the year, there's 12, 13,000 fans there when they're allowed to pack the park. So it will feel somewhat like a normal baseball
game. Yeah, and Scherzer's point, or one of the points that he made, was the whole upper deck. You got the upper deck. Now, is that as awesome? Probably not. You'd like to be in the lower bowl if you can be, but you could spread people out plenty simply up there. Now, there's logistics of food stands and staff working and everything else, and I understand it's more complicated than simply just put some people up there. But these are thoughtful, smart people. These are folks that know what the hell they're talking about when it comes to these protocols. And the frustration, I think, from a lot of folks was with the D.C. government not necessarily saying yes or no, it was the non-answer. It was the, okay, what are we supposed to do? Give us the metrics for success. So good on them, honestly, for turning this around and getting to this. It took a little public pressure, and it happened. And whatever benchmarks needed to be met, I'm not smart enough to know what they are. You know, Monica Dixon does. She knows about how many entrances, how many, 6 feet separations, how many this filtration unit or this number of food stands or bathroom logistics. That's stuff that I don't think about. It's just a regular pudgy idiot that likes to go to sporting events. They figured those things out, you would think, and had all those in a row. So good on DC for turning around and getting it done.
So excited to hear this. And I really hope that we've had so many listeners calling in, letting us know they wanted to get to the game, they're vaccinated, whatever. That if you want to be there, you get to one of these. Tickets will be at a premium, obviously. I mean, it's going to be difficult. I think the toughest ticket in town has always been a Caps game for a playoffs. I can't imagine how hard it's going to be to get your hands
at 10% capacity
on one of 2,000 tickets to a Caps game. The only good news is that hopefully there should never be a member of a visiting fan base at this point this year in our arenas or in our stadium because it's just so hard to get the tickets in town. You would think that people from outside are going to have an even harder time doing it. What'd you think of 5,000 at Nats Park? I really was impressed. People obviously brought great energy. There was a pizzazz having not been there. But it did. It felt way more normal than I thought it would with only 5,000.
Yeah.
I don't know if they were still pumping anything in. But just watching baseball this week, you forgot how cool it is to see fans.
Yeah.
Like the Nolan Arenado home run, if you watched it yesterday, he was playing his first game in St. Louis. It was Cardinals home opener. He signed a big contract. It was a tight game all day long. And then he comes up, and of course, great storyline, only in sports. He hits the big home run, and he gets the curtain call. The coolest thing about the video was the fan reaction to him. And I wouldn't have even known that a year ago. You know, that's right. One of those things where it would have been furniture in the room I didn't notice.
Had it been not taken away.
2 years ago. Now when I watch that, I go, what a amazing clip. These people's days were made. They went into a sports bar. They hung out all day long waiting to get into the game, hoping that they could get a swing from Arenado. And then in the biggest spot in the late innings, he comes through. It was just cool to watch.
Yeah, it's one of those things where because it's because they've been taken away, you begin to appreciate it. Right. If that hadn't happened, I'm with you. I wouldn't have thought twice about it. But going through the NBA bubble, watching how empty everything felt, you can hear it was kind of cool. It was novel. You could hear the guys talking on the court to some degree. You could hear the sneakers squeaking like you were there in the arena. You know, guys yelling out switches and calling out screens and whatever else. You went through that period where you didn't know how awesome that atmosphere was. And I think you forgot, not necessarily you, but I mean, I think I sort of kind of didn't appreciate it properly until it was taken away from us. And now that you've added even just a portion of it back in, it's different when there's two strikes and Max Scherzer throws the pitch and there's the gasp or a ball goes up in the air and you're not sure if it's going to be out of the park or not or whatever, right? Just that those little things that have just been normal, as you said, part of the furniture forever, aren't. It's actually a major part of it, and it even adds to the at-home watching experience, right? There, you know what the energy likes in a crowd. When the angle of the ball coming off the bat's a certain way, you see the umpire, you see the center fielder, right fielder, left fielder turn and get on their horse, and you're going, okay, is it an out? Is it off the wall? Is it over? What's it going to do? That sort of feeling of being out in the crowd, you know that intuitively. On television, I didn't really realize how big of an impact it would have until it was taken away. So I'm with you, man.
Somebody's tweeting me here, says they're hearing through the grapevine the Caps will potentially have fans for the first time on April 15th against the Sabres. Could be around 2,000 or 2,100 people.
That's their second home game.
So
after this.
We'll wait and see. I mean, I don't know. Monica Dixon just posted a statement, by the way. Came out moments ago. She says, we are grateful to Mayor Bowser, DC Health, and DC HSEMA for granting us a waiver to welcome Caps and Wizards fans back to Capital One Arena. The waiver is for a 10% capacity, 2,100 fans. We are finalizing details and will release further announcements on Monday, April 12th. So 3 days from now, on Monday, they'll have the full plan on when you can go see the Caps and the Wizards. But speaking of Monica Dixon, who's in charge of this, she was on our show yesterday, and we asked her point blank, something that now I think really matters for a lot of you, for our listeners who are considering going to a game if and when things open back up, how will they be able to feel comfortable or confident that they're going to be kept safe around a couple thousand people? You know, what is being done to maintain distance and keep everybody following protocols? This is what Monica told us.
Well, there's a very distinct area where you're going to be able to walk and not walk. You're not going to be able to jump in an elevator. That's a major issue that people have concerns about, both the city and obviously we do too. So we've created walkways for folks to get to where they need to go, where they won't have to pass a lot of people or be in congested choke points. The other thing that we've been doing, and this took a lot of folks working tirelessly, is we've zip tied seats together that will not be available for seating. We're selling seats and providing seats to season ticket holders in sort of 1 to 4 seat groupings. But in between those groupings will be 6 feet at a minimum, and we're zip tying those seats so there's no confusion about where people sit. And if you can imagine our team, our staff, walking around Cap One Arena and zip tying all of those seats in a configuration that allows for fans to come in and sit safely, that's exactly the kind of work we've been doing.
I think I would feel pretty good having had the ability now to have her on the show and ask all the questions, not just that we had, but hopefully that our listeners had.
Mm-hmm.
They put a lot of work into this, and it's not that many people.
Right.
In a pretty cavernous building. This is a massive facility.
Oh, yeah.
2,000 people. If there were 10,000 people and it was half full, I might be a little bit more nervous. I'm half vaccinated. I've got one shot. I got another one coming up. I will make an attempt to be at the first Caps game I can go to. I'm telling you point blank.
Yeah.
Because I feel confident in what they've done.
There again, it's not just, I mean, when the entire fight was happening with other things, about people kind of going back into buildings with schools and the like, right? There were all these things, hey, tell us what needs to happen. And nobody was kind of able to do that. It sounds like as we've sort of gotten further along in this thing, there's more information where, you know, again, everyone likes to yell about what the science is, but it actually, there's some helpful things. You need, as Ted Leonsis pointed out in his series of tweets, we've done this with ventilation. There are now more, there's X amount of airflow, which is helpful. And not, I don't mean flowing between people, but kind of getting rid and expelling some of the exhale and stuff that's bad, moving people apart. Here's how the science works behind this. Here are some thoughtful metrics, all these different things. It's not just, okay, you can open your doors now. No, there's a lot more that's gone into it. And credit to Monumental Sports Entertainment, to the Nationals as well. These are not easy things. These are really smart engineering-type problem sort of things. It's the world's worst word problem. Remember those where Jimmy can't sit next to anybody that's got 17 lemons, and people that have 14 lemons can't sit next to Craig, and then there's like 7,000 of those, and you've got to figure all that out. That's really, really challenging to do, and they've sort of figured those logistical things out, it seems like. I'm with you. I feel very comfortable.
We'll have Michael Bryce Sadler on, who broke this news.
Nice.
3:25 coming up in 8 minutes on Grant and Danny. If you guys want to hop in right now, your reaction, this is breaking, this is right now happening, and it's huge and exciting in Washington, D.C. There will be an opportunity to go to games. Wizards fans, Caps fans, 2,000 people at Capital One Arena and at Nationals Park up to 10,000 fans in the 41,000-seat stadium. 800-636-1067 is the number if you want to react. Chris is in Hyattsville on the line. What's up, Chris? How are you?
I'm good, guys. I've got some baseball practice going on tomorrow. You hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is great news. I'm not going to go until I'm fully vaxxed, Danny Ruye style, with my second dose.
We call that the Ruye.
The Ruye, yes.
Danny was the third person vaccinated in America.
Somehow.
Basically.
So it's like doctors, first responders,
he's
and then me.
He's got special underlying conditions, which I think being a comedian is an underlying
insecurity.
Condition.
Need for attention is an underlying condition.
By the way, I tried to call in earlier to defend Mr. Ruye against everyone else for saying that he doesn't say goodbye. Do you at least do the head nod acknowledgement, Danny?
No, there's nothing. There's nothing.
At an event, I'm out, and at the airport, it's time to go home.
Oh, well, okay. I think you owe Grant a nod. I think you owe him a nod.
I would do it on the plane, but he's asleep until the exact moment he has to get off the plane.
Well, Grant, come on. It's you got to work. It takes two to tango, okay? So, I'm excited. I'm happy for people that want to go. I'm not going to go until I'm fully vaxxed, and then you have to wait a couple weeks or whatever, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, as soon as all that's done, the first place I'm going is Nats Park with my kid.
Attaboy.
And I would love to see my first Stanley Cup game ever. I've never been to a Stanley Cup game, so I'd love to do that.
Let's go. All we got to do, Chris, is find a way to get the Caps to stop giving up goals. I mean, at this point,
I've been trying to figure out a way.
They're cup caliber, but they're in a rut right now. They have not been playing very well. All right, let's step aside because we do have the reporter who just broke this news coming up. Darris was able to grab him, and he's going to join us as soon as we return here on Grant and Danny. If you guys want to weigh in like Chris did to react, 800-636-1067 is the number on G&D on the Fan. Slows Dave Jagler Nationals pregame about 15 minutes away. We're a little over a half hour from the first pitch of Nats Dodgers in LA. First road game of the season. 2019 World Series champs, 2020 World Series champs. And in fact, the Dodgers, Danny, are currently getting their World Series rings on the field.
Watching MLB Network and former National, Blake Treinen. A lot of these things are sort of intertwined, but he was getting his World Series ring with some of the highlight packages they're playing. The place is as packed as it can be, given these current times, but people are celebrating that 2020 title.
Speaking of celebrating, there is reason to celebrate if you're a DC sports fan and someone who wants to see the area get back to where we were before the pandemic, with more vaccinations being finished and more people being vaccinated. We're getting closer and closer to returning to some semblance of normalcy, and a big development on that front today. Michael Bryce Sadler of the Washington Post, who covers DC government, is joining us on Grant and Danny because he just broke the news that we're going to have him discuss here on the show, and that is that Caps and Wizards fans will be able to get back to the arena next week, and that Nats fans will be able to get to Nationals Park in higher numbers than they were previously. First of all, Michael, thanks for the time. How are you?
Sure, guys. Busy day. Not too bad. Not too bad. Thanks for having me on.
I bet. So you just broke this news. So kind of give us the details. What do you know?
Yeah, so I guess starting with the Nats, who started their season a little bit earlier this month, allowing 5,000 fans per game. That's 12% of the park's capacity. Now the city is bumping that up to 25%. So that's going to be more than 10,000 fans at home games moving forward. The soccer team, DC United, will also be able to bump up their capacity at Audi Field from 10% to 25% for their first home game, April 17th. And then, of course, the Wizards and the Caps, they are going to actually be able to have fans now moving forward, and that was a question mark, and they'll open up at 10% starting Tuesday when the Caps return home.
So, Michael, I'm a D.C. resident, and this has been very on brand, I would say, for D.C. It's like no information, no update, and then boom, sort of, now in this case, it's good news as just an idiot sports fan, but it kind of seems like there's not a cohesive process where everybody seems informed sort of throughout. Can you walk us through what we knew when?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think there's a some semblance of truth to what you're saying. I mean, the decisions around reopening have been gradual as vaccinations have risen, as DC's coronavirus metrics have kind of plateaued in the past month. The city has become more comfortable with allowing some of these things that we were wary about at first. So, for example, on Monday, the mayor said that starting in May, they're going to ease capacity on entertainment venues like movie theaters, recreation centers, libraries. And they also announced that pools will open up this summer. In addition, weddings, businesses, and other indoor type events can start opening up at limited capacity in May, where they were previously a lot more restricted. So, this is something that the city has had on their radar, obviously allowing fans into Nats Park initially. We were told that a decision would come soon, but we certainly didn't know it would be today.
That's all. Just great news. And the guy that broke the news, the reporter who's done a great job on this, is Michael Bryce Sadler, who covers the D.C. government. I know you cover the D.C. part of this and less the sports part, but I am curious if you've heard from the people you're talking to. It sounds like the Wiz and the Caps are able to have fans immediately from what you said. I think the Caps' next home game is Tuesday. Do we know if that is the plan? The MSE has come out and said, you know, they'll update everyone on Monday, but have you heard if Tuesday there will be fans there?
My understanding is that is the tentative plan, at least from what I'm hearing on the city side. I have not been in contact with anyone from the team to know that it's a finalized decision. But it is effective immediately, meaning if they wanted to, starting Tuesday, fans could be in seats. I just don't know the logistics of that process, honestly.
Michael, as we kind of go back, D.C., and I, to their credit, if they were being thoughtful sort of throughout all this, and it's tough to just make a city like it's a person. These are a lot of people that are making these sorts of decisions, so forgive me kind of butchering it that way. But D.C., if they were being thoughtful, that's one thing, but if they were just sort of moving slowly as other cities had kind of approved this, nobody's saying 40,000 like they have in Texas or full capacity, but there were larger numbers at a lot of stadiums that aren't too far away from Washington, D.C. Why do you think that they were a little bit more, whether it was cautious or thoughtful or judicious in their actions?
Sure. Well, from the start, whether it be implementing restrictions or easing them, Mayor Bowser has not looked at what other cities and states and counties are doing as a model of how D.C. should move forward. She's been pretty steadfast on that point, that she's not looking at, you know, her neighbor's paper to try to figure out how D.C. should do things. So I think it's a very much approach where public safety is first and foremost the name of the game. They want to proceed with reverence and caution and make sure that we're not going to move backwards as our vaccines and coronavirus cases are trending in the right direction. And I guess now they felt like this was the appropriate time to make that move, even though it is a little bit later than some of the other cities that we've seen in regards to their hockey and basketball teams.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate the time. And I'll tell you, your news today, I think, gave a lot of people some joy. Thanks very much for hopping on with us.
Thank you, Michael.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, be well. Michael Bryce Sadler on Grant and Danny. They're on 106.7 The Fan. He is on Twitter at @TheArtist_MBS. He's got all the details on everything going on with the announcement today from D.C. that the Wizards and the Capitals immediately can start holding fans.
Yes.
And the Nats, when they get back from L.A. and St. Louis, can go from 5,000 to over 10,000.
It's really cool. And we now I wasn't expecting it this quickly with the Caps, Wizards, Mystics inside.
Yeah, not after the conversation. I mean, Monica Dixon certainly said, look, we're hopeful. We want this to change. We think it will. But she made it seem like we're hoping in the next couple weeks that we'll find out about the playoffs. Well, they had kind of even said, I mean, she said as much on the show yesterday when we played those clips from her, from my conversation with her. She basically had said that they'd prepared to not have fans for the rest of the regular season.
Right.
And that they were just hoping that the Caps in the playoffs would be able to get some fans.
And I want to make a big distinction here. This wasn't as if they'd been told no and were appealing that. They hadn't heard. The only thing that they'd heard was, we don't have a decision at this point. When do you think you're going to make one? We don't know. So it got kicked up the agenda. It got kicked up the meeting minutes. Hey, any new business? Yeah, let's get the stadium thing done. But one of the things that you and I speculated was, we like the idea of, let's do 5,000 at Nats Park. Let's do it. Let's just do five. Nobody's saying 35. No one's saying 40. No one's saying, let's Texas Ranger this thing. Let's just do five. And if five goes swimmingly, what about 7,500? What about 10? What about 10,300? Is basically there's a point where we go, this is no longer practical given the public health challenges and everything else. And I get that. I got a level head on my shoulders. I think you do too. The point was, I could have seen this 5 going to 10 before we got anything for Capital One Arena because of the inside versus outside kind of a deal. We've got 5,000. That works swimmingly. We realize we've got enough entrances. We got you use the home plate gate. You use the right field gate, which no one ever uses. You guys got center field. You guys got that in between left field and the third baseline and right by where the donuts are. And then you can smell the fried food from Hank's. And then there's hot dogs that's right there. And it's a great area where the 106.7 The Fan broadcasting booth is. We could split it up. Everybody can go in different places. We can do 10 because we've got the upper deck as well. We'll figure that out. I'm surprised, frankly, that this was all the boxes got checked here. Not only can you do 10, not only can DC United do double what they did before, or double and then some, but you guys could get 10% too in the indoor arena. I'm actually really surprised it happened this quickly. One fell swoop.
Yeah, I am too, and I'm excited to get back to games. I'll have to see. It's one of those things I got to talk to the wife and see what she thinks and how everything will work for the family, but and maybe I end up waiting for that second shot to go indoors in the arena. I feel really good about getting to the Nats Park right now, though.
Yeah, man.
And I just like it being a possibility and an option for people to make that decision for themselves, and particularly people that are vaccinated. There are people now, when theoretically you get vaccinated 2 weeks later, you're told, hey, go out and live. Go do what you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to go to a game, you, Danny Ruye, should
That's right.
go to a game. And I'm excited that our listeners can get back and start doing that. All right, let's look at the lineups for today against the Dodgers. Nats are getting a couple of key players back. The good news continues. Brad Hand, their closer, and both of their catchers in their normal rotation, Yan Gomes and Alex Avila, are all returning from the COVID protocol and available today against the Dodgers. So Hand may pitch. The two catchers are not in the lineup. Jonathan Lucroy, they kept, is in the lineup. But here's your batting order today. Victor Robles continues to lead off and play center field. Very good opening series for Robles, taking pitches.
Really encouraging, man. Really encouraging.
Trey Turner looking to homer for the third time in 4 games. He'll play shortstop and bat second. Juan Soto, despite the game-winning hit, hasn't really gotten going yet, locked in offensively. And I would even say the spring, similarly, wasn't barreling the ball a whole lot. But he drew 3 walks in his most recent time out. You never have to worry about Juan Soto. He's batting third, playing right field. Ryan Zimmerman will bat cleanup after getting game 2 of the doubleheader off in the 3rd game of the season. He's at first base. He's off to a fast start.
They need protection for Juan Soto. This lineup is really, to me, about how many pitches can Juan Soto get to hit, because that's where your biggest damage is going to be done. He continues to swing it. That'll help.
Starlin Castro at third base today will bat 5th. 6th hitter is Andrew Stevenson. Gives you a lefty toward the bottom of the lineup as a left fielder. Speaking of lefties, Luis Garcia, the second baseman, will bat 7th. And then they're keeping LaCroix on the roster to play today. Maybe Gomes, Avila, not quite ready. Don't have their legs yet. So you want to give LaCroix one more opportunity behind the plate. Joe Ross bats 9th and pitches. He can actually swing the stick a little bit.
You're going to have to do something with that bottom part of the order. You got to generate something. Now, it's Walker Buehler. Nobody generates against him. That dude's filthy. He's nasty. If he pitched in that playoff series against the Nationals every inning, they wouldn't have scored any of those times. I mean, he is really, really, really good. You got to find a way to, if you're Joe Ross, A, keep your team in the game. B, if you're the Nationals, scratch and claw. Maybe somebody can pop one. Hooping a blast.
I wanted to get your feedback on this.
Yep.
So the Annandale Adams baseball team,
mm-hmm.
high school baseball,
yep.
coached by my brother-in-law.
Uh-huh.
The last couple of years as the Grant and Danny radio program, we have sponsored one of their innings and their pitching changes. Okay,
yeah.
Over the loudspeaker at the school.
Cool.
I just give money of the Grant and Danny show. What they want to know what they're supposed to read about the show when they make either their pitching changes or for the inning that we sponsor.
I'm here on the spot. So do we need like a tagline or a slogan?
Well, do you just want to say listen to Grant and Danny weekdays from 2 to 6:30 on 106.7 The Fan? Do you want a little more detail on Danny and his career? Like, what do you want him to read?
Like, you could say Grant and Danny, Yan Gomes is here. 106.7 The Fan.
I like that.
Like I'm thinking of some shtick.
Something for some insiders.
Yeah, like, but if the people don't get it, then it's not gonna make any sense to them.
If you ever go to an Annandale Adams baseball game,
I got
to
do that now
in Annandale.
Yeah,
and you watch a little high school baseball. Don't be alarmed when the 4th inning is sponsored by the Grant and Danny radio show. That's all I'm telling you.
Grant and Danny, a couple of portly guys chatting sports on 106.7 The Fan.
This pitching change brought to you by Grant and Danny. Make sure you listen to Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. Weekdays from 2 to 6:30.
Yeah, let's play it straight. That's better.
Something like that.
Yeah.
I'll draw something up. I'll let you know what I came up with. Doug Williams is on the show on Monday, so make sure you're listening at 4:40 to hear from a Super Bowl MVP and a legend. Speaking of legends, Charlie and Dave are next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.